content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine, under the upfront section, the A-list. Seven things Selma Blair suggests doing now. One, face facts. When I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2018 at the age of 46, I realized I had probably been having symptoms for years. There had been times after my son was born in 2011 that I couldn't move because the pain in my joints was so intense. I blamed myself. I thought I had failed at childbirth. After I finally got the diagnosis, I was able to seek the right help. 2. Be yourself at any age. The MS has caused some prefrontal brain damage. When I sat down to write my new memoir, Mean Baby, it came out as if from the 8-year-old I was when I first wanted to write a book, she laughs. But being a baby writer is beautiful, and I hope to help other little Selmas with my story. 3. Keep going. I've always been a talker. So even if my voice falters or goes into a spasm, I talk through it. I'm learning not to give it a rest. 4. Reach out and touch someone. I don't like not being able to do certain things, but I'm finding such a connection with people. If I see an arm offered, I grab it. That's new for me, and it makes the day more like a game. 5. Flaunt your assets. I never had bad balance before, but the cane has become my dance partner. My days of heels are nearly gone, so my long cane days might be over too. Those canes will have to be cut down for the Air Jordans I will now be wearing. 6. Find closure. My mother was a harsh critic, and I always wanted her to edit my book, to really clean it up. Then she died of cancer. I felt such a profound sense of grief and loss. But when I started down the path of embracing life and writing about it, and also of participating in a documentary about my MS treatments, everything that I was doing became very rooted in my mother. The film is a love letter to her, as I'm trying to let go of her. And finally, 7, embrace change. I realized that if I'm lucky, I could reach 85, MS or not. Our abilities are always fleeting, but when they fail, it's treated as a tragedy. How do we encounter a chaotic shift in our life without feeling it's an end to something? We just have to adapt. And this was as told to Bobby Dempsey. Selma Blair is a popular TV, American Crime Story, and film, Legally Blonde and Hellboy actress. The new documentary, Introducing Selma Blair, Discovery Plus, chronicles her recent stem cell transplant, a difficult treatment that has put her multiple sclerosis into remission. Blair's new memoir, Mean Baby, was available on May 17th. And I need to describe her picture because she looks so awesome. She's in a white dress with red roses all over it, and a black collar and black cuffs. She has on black high heel shoes, and she's leaning on a black cane. She has one foot in front of the other, and a little bit of a swagger to her posture, and she looks awesome. Now, also from AARP, the magazine, let's look at the truth about police support calls. This is by Doug Shadell, and the title is To Outsmart Fraud. They sound like charities, but many aren't, which means donations mostly get pocketed. I'm calling on behalf of the National Save the Police Fund, the voice on the phone told me. We support police officers who risk their lives daily protecting our communities. Can the police officers count on you? Gotten calls like this? So have we all. At the end of 2021, robocalls raising money for police groups were the highest volume phone messages in most U.S. markets, according to NomoRobo, a robocall blocking company that works with AARP on fraud prevention. A recent one-month tally of some 40 million robocalls equates to about one call for every five adults in the country. These callers typically use language that suggests they are charities raising money directly for local police. But what is the truth? The answer is that in many cases, these aren't charities at all. Instead, they're independent, expenditure-only political action committees, or super PACs, P-A-C-S. These organizations emerged in the wake of the Citizens United Supreme Court decision in 2010, which ruled that restricting business donations to political action committees is unconstitutional, provided the PACs don't give directly to political candidates. Why does this matter? Simple. Less scrutiny. Charities face relatively rigorous review from the Internal Revenue Service, and most states require them to register before they can operate there. Super PACs generally have far fewer state-level reporting requirements and are regulated by the Federal Election Commission, FEC, which has fewer enforcement options than the IRS. The result? A rise in unscrupulous super PACs that use sympathetic-sounding causes mostly to line their own pockets. The FEC has called this subset scam PACs. I recently took about a dozen of these police-supported calls to hear the pitches. The first thing I noticed was that I wasn't talking to live people. The answers all sounded scripted and recorded. In fact, former employees of these type of super PACs have testified about how they use soundboard technology to play pre-recorded messages as responses, in part so they could talk to several donors at once. When I asked how much of my contribution would go directly to first responders and the families of police officers killed in the line of duty, only one telemarketer replied directly. 90% went to fundraising and 10% went to police support. Wow. That means that out of a $35 donation, no more than $3.50 goes to the stated cause. On all the other calls, my questions got shunted aside. One voice responded, "How much do you want to give then?" When I told him I wasn't going to give anything until I found out where my money was going, the voice said, "You can go to our website and find out more about the organization. We will put you on the do not call list. Thank you. Goodbye." I went to the website, but it didn't have any information about where the money would go. To find out more about these organizations, I probed the FEC website, where super PACs report their activity. I quickly identified over 70 super PACs with police or law enforcement in their names. I looked up one called Law Enforcement for a Safer America PAC, which seemed to be especially active based on NomoRobo's monitoring. It was raising money using four different police-oriented names, one association, two coalitions, and one support fund. In the first half of 2021, this organization reported donations of $4.3 million. Expenditures were just under $4.2 million. So here's a sidebar, safe charitable giving. Plan your annual charitable giving and stick to this. Never give based solely on a phone, mail, or email, or online pitch. Whenever possible, donate directly to an organization and not through a telemarketer or a third-party solicitation. Research charities before contributing. Look for how much of your contribution will be used for program services. Verify charities via your state's Secretary of State office, Charity Navigator, or other independent screeners. And finally, read their tax filings. Just search the charity name along with the number 990, the IRS form for charities. Now back to finishing the article, we were just talking about the expenditures being under $4.2 million. The bulk of this is going to overhead, raise fundraising, lawyers, lead lists, and so on. I found a few small line items labeled legislative services, but none that appeared to go directly to supporting police. Another useful fact, organizations that file reports with the FEC have to list a treasurer. This particular Super PAC's treasurer is a former cop who was arrested for stealing $50,000 from the police union for which he served as president. The case has not yet been resolved. Are the money-gathering techniques these scam PACs use illegal? Sadly, it comes down to their choice of words during a pitch. It's unlawful to represent how the money will be spent. But as I learned, these callers are masters at evading any such disclosure. Either way, there are all kinds of public warnings against them, from Better Business Bureau, state attorneys general, and even local police. Now, the last thing I want to do is discourage you from giving to causes you care about, like supporting police. I've provided a few tips, which we just read, for screening charities. You can even email your local police and ask if they would recommend a charity they trust or partner with. But these telemarketers bombarding our phones, just hang up. Law enforcement has a tough enough job without having to put up with charlatans masquerading as heroes. Now we're going to look at the very last article in Prevention, Finding Your Calm. Stop dwelling. Stat. Bad day? Your guide for how to move past it. You completely botched a job interview or stumbled your way through a toast at your friend's Zoom wedding. This may sound harsh, but you should really just get over it. Your health may be at stake. Dwelling on a stressful event might increase inflammation levels in your body, according to one study from Ohio University, the first to directly measure the physiological link between inflammation and rumination on negative incidents. Researchers asked 34 women aged 18 to 28 to give an impromptu speech about their strengths and weaknesses to a panel. During the event, the panel remained stony-faced. Participants were then told to either replay the speech in their mind for several minutes or to imagine something else, like walking up and down the aisles of a grocery store. By collecting blood samples from the participants throughout the study, researchers discovered that the concentration of C-reactive protein in the blood, a sign of inflammation, was higher for both groups following the speech. But while the C-reactive protein levels continued to rise for the group that stayed focused on how poorly the speech went, they returned to normal for the group that thought about something else afterwards. What we think this suggests is that ruminating or dwelling on these stressful events after they're over may make the inflammatory response last longer, but distractions may reduce or lessen that, says Peggy Zoccola, Ph.D., one of the co-authors of the study, and an assistant professor of psychology at Ohio University. So call yourself out. If you find yourself turning a problem over and over in your mind, actively acknowledge that you're dwelling on it. Then ask yourself, is this getting me anywhere? If not, that's a strong indication that it's time to try a different approach. Chronic inflammation has been linked to a number of diseases and disorders, including cardiovascular disease, diabetes, dementia, and depression. Women are much more likely than men to report daily or weekly worrying, anxiety, or nervousness, according to a survey from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Even if you normally let things roll off your back, certain situations tend to bring out the worrier in all of us. Things that are particularly upsetting or traumatic can lead an individual to engage in this kind of repetitive or ruminative thought. You are trying to think, what happened? Why did it happen to me? What are the consequences? When your mind is stuck on repeat and you just can't shake that negative event out of your head, try one of these four strategies to help you let go. 1. Let yourself think about it. While this may seem counterintuitive, research has shown that making a conscious effort to not think about something almost guarantees you'll fixate on it. Simply telling someone to suppress their thoughts and just not think about them may make them think about it even more. Instead, acknowledge your thoughts about the negative event. resist the urge to respond to them emotionally. Just accept that you have them. And then imagine taking those thoughts and setting them aside. Some researchers think this mindfulness technique could help you move toward closure and to move on. 2, make sure your mind is elsewhere. In the study, researchers used about 20 different prompts, such as, think about what a rose looks like, picture a ship sailing on the ocean, and imagine yourself walking down the aisles at the grocery store. All of these to keep participants from thinking about the stressful speech they had given. This exemplifies how distractions, even fairly mundane ones, may help keep your mind off of negative incidents. The key is to find something that will keep you fully absorbed, whether it's a hands-on hobby you enjoy, like painting, or something that will keep your brain engaged, like a challenging game of Sudoku. 3, grab a pen. Since people often get hung up on stressful events because they're trying to make sense of them, taking to pen and paper or a keyboard can help. Expressive writing and getting your emotions out there can help you construct a story, especially for something very disruptive. That journaling, research shows that journaling or writing after a stressful incident can lead to more positive outcome and greater well-being. It may help facilitate that closure process. Finally, breathe deeply. Worrying doesn't only occupy the brain, it can also have a harmful effect on the body. When we ruminate too much, our heart rate speeds up and our muscles tighten. To counteract this and eliminate that physical stress, try engaging in deep breathing or rolling out your mat for a few yoga poses. Practice these day exercises every day and you'll start to feel a sense of calm return to your body. And that's the end of this magazine for us. Now, looking at a little upfront live advice from AARP, the magazine, auto sweeps, robotic vacuums, now 20 years old, are getting better with age. Once the stuff of science fiction, remember Rosie on the Jetsons? Robot cleaners have been roving floors for 2 decades now. What to know if you're considering one? You'll need some light tech skills. The vacuum connects to your Wi-Fi, and using a phone app will help you manage it. You shouldn't get rid of your current vacuum. Robos are best for maintaining cleanliness between regular vacuuming sessions, says Consumer Reports reporter Susan Booth. They won't run into your things. Vacuums with obstacle detection sense furniture. Some have LIDAR, a laser system that creates a digital layout of your home. Next, stage your home to live. Make your house so inviting that you won't want to move. Anyone who has sold a house may remember that when it was staged, they thought, wow, my house looks so nice now. Maybe I should stay. And so we asked some professionals, what secrets of home staging can we apply to home life? Set the tone. An entryway should be clutter-free and bright, said Savannah, Georgia-based interior designer Elizabeth Demos. Avoid letting this area become a dumping zone. Keep things fresh. Move your furniture around, take away some of your collections, or switch out pillows and throws to change up the color mood of a room. A quick sprucing up of our surroundings can be very uplifting. And lighten up, brighten walls, and pare down furnishings. Now, also from the magazine, here's Upfront Go, Yellowstone at 150. America's first national park by the numbers. 10,000 is the number of thermal features, including geysers, mud pots, hot springs, and fumaroles. 67 mammal species, such as moose, bears, elks, and wolves. Yellowstone is considered America's Serengeti. 5,000 free-roaming bison, the largest public U.S. herd. 900 miles of trails, including those you can hike to the spectacular Fairy Falls. 3 states have portions of Yellowstone's nearly 3,500 square miles Wyoming is home to most of the park, but it stretches into Montana and Idaho as well. 4 million Yellowstone visitors in 2019, approximate number before the pandemic. In 2020, that number dropped to about 3.8 million. And if you want to step into history, not of a mind to stand shoulder to shoulder with strangers in a museum, go on a walking tour instead. Free or tip-based tours are booming enterprises. There's music in Harlem in New York City. Learn about the popular breakfast dances at the former Smalls Paradise, how to boo performers at the Apollo, and where to find classic soul foods. That's in freetoursbyfoot.com. Sites in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Visit landmark forts, San Cristobal and El Moro, plus the narrowest house in Puerto Rico, just 5 feet wide, and the bar that claims to have invented the piña colada. That's at Civitas, CIVITATIS.com. A market experience in Seattle. Goodness, we're all over the globe here. See fishmongers sling salmon at the historic Pike Place Market. Snap a photo of the original Starbucks and add to the colorful gum wall. That's at SeattleFreeWalkingTours.com. Now here's the tech section. A new life for old media. What you need to preserve: movies, music, photos, and more. Got a box of VHS home movies or a bunch of family photos on an old floppy disk? In our constantly evolving digital world, it's a good idea to get that ancient media transferred to modern formats. Here's the path to saving those memories and that important data. So we have three categories here: what you have, what you need, and what you'll get. What you have: printed photos. You need a scanner, and you'll get JPG digital photos on your computer or stored in the cloud. LPs. You need a turntable, plus a USB cable, and maybe an adapter, plus a computer, plus an audio software. And you'll get MP3s or high-quality WAV, AIFF, or FLAC files to play on your computer or phone. If you have cassette tapes, you need a cassette player plus a USB cable, maybe an adapter, computer, and software, and you'll get MP3 files. If you have videotapes, you need a USB video converter and a computer, digital, and you'll get digital video files in MP4, AVI, or WMV format to play on your computer. If you have DVDs, you'll need a computer plus a DVD drive plus video software. Digital files is what you'll get in MKV or MP4 format. And finally, floppy disks. You'll need an external floppy disk reader plus a computer, maybe an adapter, and you'll get new files on your computer hard drive. We have a question for the tech guru. I sometimes have the word queued come up on my texts. I don't know why this happens or what it means, but I don't think those messages get sent to their intended recipients. This can happen on Android phones. Queued means your phone isn't connected to a cellular data network, and so the text is being placed in a queue to be sent later. Check to make sure your phone is not in airplane mode, or you may be in a cellular dead spot. If a connection is reestablished within 2 hours, texts in the queue will be sent, but after 2 hours, messages expire. So when you get the queued message, keep checking to see if your text eventually went through or not. And queue, of course, means line. Say what? Movie dialogues can be hard to hear on your TV. What to do about it? Do you ever struggle to understand the dialogue when watching a movie on television? It may not have to do with hearing loss, but rather with how that audio was created. In theaters, different sounds play through different speakers, and the dialogue projected from a center channel for clarity. Most TVs aren't built like that. Some ways to hear better are turned down the base. According to the tech website CNET, base is the enemy of understandable speech. You can compress the volume range. Some TVs feature a night mode, which reduces the difference between the loudest and the softest parts of the audio. Keep yours on this setting all the time. Some TVs refer to it as dynamic compression. Invest in a sound bar. A slim sound bar placed below the TV contains many small speakers. Each plays a unique channel. And finally, get a good pair of headphones. Viewers can often hear dialogue more clearly with headphones. For convenience, some streaming boxes offer headphone jacks in the remote control. Now we have a couple of minutes left, so we're going to move on to AARP, the bulletin, and to an ongoing article that we're looking at on various ways to save money. So this time we're going to be looking at home maintenance. And we're up to number 50 out of 99. Bleach unsightly spots. Water stain on a white ceiling or wall. Avoid repainting by spritzing with 10% bleach in 90% water. The stain should disappear in a few days, so be patient. Old stains might also need to be sprayed with a mold remover. Swap hardware finishes. For about $7, Rub and Buff allows you to change the finish of faucets, metal knobs, and more. Or you can use Rust-Oleum spray paint in bronze, black, or gold to change the look. Place the hardware on a large piece of cardboard and apply several coats. Turn off the ice maker. Making ice increases your fridge's energy consumption by 10 to 20%. Ironically, 3/4 of that energy is used to heat the molds so they will release the ice. Consider getting some old-fashioned ice trays. Stop throwing out used sandpaper. Belt sanders, orbital sanders, and other powered sanders can quickly get gunked up and less effective. Instead of throwing out the sandpaper sheets, clean them to extend their lives. Try this. While the sander is running, hold the bottom of an old tennis shoe against the sandpaper. It will clean out much of the gunk and make it almost like new. Finally, get a smart thermostat. In addition to operating on a set schedule, smart thermostats learn your temperature preferences and some can sense if someone is in the room. You can operate them from your smartphone, tablet, or laptop to make the house cozy when you return. Well, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.